Welcome to Comics,
episode
244.
This week, we talk about
GSC, Black Green.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes, see what we're reading next, send us a message, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics.
And now, the cast begins. Warner Brothers released a trailer for Batman vs. Superman.
Oh, yeah.
Did you guys happen to watch that?
No.
No. Well, I'll confess in not being interested in that movie at all.
Let me rant on that trailer.
Yeah?
Okay.
They basically, I think they just were like, here's the whole movie. Because, like, all these major plot points, I think, were spoiled. Because, like, it starts with Batman, it starts with Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent meeting at a party thrown by Lex Luthor. And then Batman makes a joke about clowns, freaks in clown suits, you know.
Yeah.
And basically calling Clark that also, not knowing that Clark is Superman. Well, you can't really tell.
He's Batman. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then they fight, and then there's some quotes from Lex, and he says something about if man can't kill God, then the devil will. And they have, like, Zod's body on ice, and there's, like, some scientists. And basically this thing that looks like Doomsday comes out.
Hmm.
And Batman's, like, stuck in the Batmobile, and he, like, basically does that thing that the Destroyer armor does in Thor, where it, like, shoots a laser beam out of its entire face. And looks like Batman's gonna die, and there's a big explosion. But guess what? Batman didn't die, because he got saved by Wonder Woman.
That's how she comes in.
And then Superman looks at Batman and goes, is she with you? And he goes, I thought she was with you. I'm Batman. But basically, it's like, I feel like, you know, The shitty thing about that commercial's, or that trailer's, like, inability to save anything for the actual movie makes me really appreciate the Star Wars trailers, because I have, like, no idea what that movie's about.
But still so hype.
Yeah. And I, like, know everything that's gonna happen. Okay, this is what I will, okay. I'll give this to the movie, the Batman Superman movie. Visually, it looks really cool. And I think Ben Affleck can pull off an old Bruce Wayne pretty decently.
Yeah, surprisingly enough, yeah, I agree.
But man, I just... I feel like the people at Warner Brothers were like, they saw the Civil War trailer. Did you guys see the Civil War trailer?
No.
Dude, what do you guys do with your eyes?
Productive. I still haven't seen Avengers 2, so Civil War...
Oh my god, don't. I watched it and I was so sad.
Aw.
But hey, dude, the Civil War trailer.
I hear so many good things about it.
I got that. Black Panther's in it. Black Panther's in it.
Oh, I'm down.
He looks like a badass. And Bucky and Captain America tag teaming on Iron Man. Pretty great.
Oh.
So I think that trailer looks awesome without being too spoilery, like, not in the same way that this Batman Superman trailer has utterly failed, but I get the feeling that the Warner Brothers executives or whoever's in charge of this trailers at Warner Brothers was like, dude, did you see that Marvel trailer? We need to put something out. And then they just, like, whipped this shit up and, like, ruined it.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
It's not even like the plot points or anything in the Superman versus or Batman versus Superman trailer looks particularly bad. It's that I feel like they just showed all the it was like a you know, a highlight reel of the movie that we just watched.
That seems to be the thing more and more, though. I mean, I've been seeing that with superhero movies as well. And
but I don't think Marvel, I think Marvel seems to be, have a pretty decent handle on it. Like, the Civil War trailer, like, shows that there's a conflict between Iron Man and Captain America, and it centers around Bucky. And then there are all, then Black Panther's in it, plus a bunch of heroes we've already met. And that's it. It doesn't really, and that's fine because it kind of sets up, this is the general premise of the movie without going into the details. But the Batman Superman trailer looked like it went in a chronological order. Like Batman and Superman meet. Then they meet Lex Luthor. And then there's some fighting. Then Lex Luthor creates a monster. Then they all team up to fight the monster plus Wonder Woman.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds pretty spoilery.
I've fallen off the superhero movie hype train a little bit because I'm just, I don't know, I'm all in on Flash and Arrow now too. I was off the Arrow bandwagon for a long time when he was just like, I'm so dark, the only way you can fight darkness is with more darkness. And I was like, oh god, this is the worst. But ever since he changed from the Arrow to the Green Arrow, it's been so much better of a show. I think this season's like the best season of the show so far.
Okay, I haven't watched any of season 3 of Arrow.
I think this is the best season so far. And then, okay. And then
I'm a few episodes behind on Flash, but I haven't
yeah,
watched
I think,
any. Yeah,
I think I'm one or two behind on Flash. I love it to pieces. I was explaining to somebody, I think when I was watching football this last Sunday, like. In so many of these, it's drama and mood for drama and mood's sake, and shit lasts, like, across two movies or through, like, six episodes of a season. But, you know, there was a scene in Flash where Iris's dad had kept something from her, and in every other show it would have been like, why did you keep such a big secret from me? I could never trust you again, Dad! It would have been something stupid like that. But instead it was literally a five-minute scene where she was like, you know, I'm a little upset. But I understand where you came from, and you made the call you had to make, and I still respect you, Pop. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
I did see that episode.
And that's like, just like, yes, thank you for having a real fucking conversation. Like, this is the way real people would act. Nobody would be like, I can never trust you again.
You know, this is the thing that I will give Marvel Cinematic stuff, like, major credit for, because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., someone has, like, a big secret, and they could have drawn it out forever. But, like, next episode, they're like, okay, we're gonna address this thing. And same with Jessica Jones. Like, she has a secret, and then it's addressed, like, I think within a couple episodes of when the audience finds out. And it's, like, such a trope to draw it out the entire season, and Marvel's really good about not doing that.
Good, good. Yeah, I'm excited. I got permission from the wife to finish watching Daredevil on my own, so I'm going to take that fuck up.
Oh, congratulations. You will love that.
You're going to love that.
It is my favorite.
Did you watch Jessica Jones yet, Jen?
I am, like, halfway through it, okay. And I was really down on it at first, I will say, but I'm liking it more and more, especially as David Tennant is in it more and more.
Oh, yeah, man. That guy... Like, he really does a great job. Man,
well, I liked him as an actor. Like, I've seen his Shakespearean work and his serious mm-hmm. drama, but I love Doctor Who. And I feel like they actually took him and were like, okay, we've seen what you've done as the Doctor. Just play the Doctor here, but kind of more evil. And I think it works so well.
Well, what I like about Kilgrave, David Tennant's portrayal of him, is, like, he's clearly a really bad person, but there are moments where you feel a little sympathetic for him.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes you feel a little dirty for feeling bad for him. It's just, it's a great show.
Well, that's how I feel about Fisk too in Daredevil. Like, yeah. I think both shows have that going for them. Good villains.
Mm-hmm. It's important.
Anyway,
this week's comic?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
This week's comic.
All right. This week we read JSA Black Rain, written by Jeff Johns with pencil work from Don Kramer and Rags Morales, inks from Keith Champagne and John Dell and Michael Blair, And colors from John Calise, either way. There's a lot of creators here because it was 3 issues of JSA and 2 issues of Hawkman kind of overlapping. Three issues of Hawkman. And Geoff Johns wrote them all, so that's fine. It's a cohesive story. So there was Don Kramer was the pencils for JSA, Rex Morales was the pencils for Hawkman, and inks, they were separate, but the colors was the same on both, which is kind of neat. So, this is clearly a departure in tone from the original Golden Age and also from last week. Last week we got like the darker side of the JSA and when they were retired and all, but it still ended up with shiny Nazis at the end. this comic wants to live entirely in the gray.
It does that pretty well.
I mean, there's the hard line is supposed to be that murder is bad and these people are playing Black Adam's cadre are playing judge, jury, and executioner for the name of the people of Kondak. But really, I mean, I'm with Adam Smasher. You see a warehouse full of children suffering as slaves. Yeah, fuck them.
Well, the thing that's interesting about who Black Adam and his cronies are killing is that they're not just like street level criminals or even supervillains. They are soldiers, like literally they are a military force.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if an army had rolled into Kandak to overthrow this dictatorship, the conversation would not be about murder necessarily.
No.
Because it would have been about enemy combatants. You know, these soldiers who are fighting in a war and they're, you know, there's rules of engagement and that kind of thing. But I think because you know, it's Black Adam, Adam Smasher, Nemesis, Brainwave, and Eclipso, and they're brightly colored, you know, people wearing crazy costumes, there's this strange, you know, there's different rules. And so, you know, I think that's why I don't feel bad for the people that Black Adam and his people are killing because of the atrocities that they committed, plus the fact that they're soldiers, you know. Not that soldiers should be wantonly killed.
but these are to a certain degree they've signed up for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the that's what I think this comic does really, really well, is this comic does a great job of feeding Black Adam with reasonable excuses. And Black Adam gives some of them to himself. Like, Adam Smasher is like, should we just be killing these people? Like, they might have families, you know? And what do they... I mean, this feels wrong, because they're just soldiers, you know? And Black Adam's like, make no mistake, these people are just as evil as the supervillains you fight at home. They're just not wearing bright-colored costumes. Which is a legitimate... It's like straight up. Like, that is why you feel weird, Adam Smasher, is because these guys are not running around screaming, I am a supervillain. But otherwise, they fit all the same criteria. They tick all the same boxes. And then later on, I think that same issue, Brainwave's like, I can look at their memories right now and I can tell you every single one of these people deserved it. They all did terrible things. They're having pure thoughts when they die, and that's beautiful, and I appreciate that about human beings. But make no mistake, none of these men were innocent. I mean, it does a really good job of trying to rationalize the murder.
At the same time, it almost feels like hedging, because I think that it does, like, the comic does a really good job of exploring, you know, when freeing a population from a dictatorship, what is moral, who are the good guys, and it's kind of, I don't know, of course if you're complicit in the enslavement of children, you've done something terrible.
Yeah.
On the other hand, maybe you had your reasons. Maybe you have your own children to protect, and that's, like, the only way you could. I don't know, you know, none of these soldiers have a background, but it just seems like such an easy out to say, like, oh, they're all bad murderers and rapists and child killers, whatever. It's fine if you kill them. Well, and I feel like... Oh, go on.
I was going to say, Well, actually, finish your thought, and then I'll reply. Sorry.
Oh, just... It just seems to make it more black and white. And I know that we're supposed to see, like, it's Black Adam and friends versus the JSA and who's good and who's evil, but... I don't know. Like, it makes Black Adam's point seem... I don't know. It's like giving up one side of the moral investigation in order to bolster Black Adam's part of it, one could say.
Well, I think we have to kind of think about what is the point of a superhero? What is a superhero supposed to do? You know, they're supposed to protect people, right? That's kind of their mantra. Not mantra, but, you know, the whole point is for them to protect innocent people, right? And so there are innocent people, you know, arguably innocent citizens of Kondak who are being oppressed. And, you know, Black Adam gets his little posse and they go up and free the people. That seems like the kind of thing that a superhero would do. You know, maybe murdering them is not necessarily the right thing to do. But, you know, I think that it's hard to completely side with Black Adam, but I think that his reasoning is right, you know. We don't get the backstory of the individual soldiers, like you said, Jen, but there's multiple examples of you know, war crimes and, you know, human rights violations that these guys are committing as a group. You know, they mention, they talk about, you know, taking young girls and, you know, sexually exploiting them and putting other kids into forced labor. And we don't even know what happened to their parents. I mean, most of them, they say they're orphans, so we can only assume that their parents are not able to be parents anymore, probably because they've been killed by these soldiers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know that it makes me side with Black Adam at all in the beginning, because Black Adam is talking about doing this all over the place and going to bordering countries and conquering them too and freeing, quote-unquote, freeing those people under his new benevolent dictatorship. And I think that's where you kind of get the sense it's not really a gray area. Yes, Black Adam, you have the greatest of intentions, but let's face it here, you're getting rid of one dictator to install another. And as benevolent as you are, it's still not like the people are running their own lives. You're doing it for them. And you're wanting to spread that rule. Like, this almost feels like Black Adam, just a more righteous extension of your pre-existing wish to rule the world in some way or another. But what makes it relatable in any way is Adam Smasher, who sees it for this instance, this country. Yes, this country, these people, it sucks. And Black Adam is from here in a roundabout kind of way. And he has some legitimate claim to maybe be here and to maybe do this here. You know, and that's what brings in the gray area. And I think that's what makes the compromise that they ultimately strike a good one to kind of house arrest him to Kandak. But without Adam Smasher, this is all not good. Cause then it's just a self-righteous way of trying to rule the world.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, I will agree. I don't think that his desire to start going into other countries like Egypt is the right thing to do. But I think that, you know, he's not going to be, maybe, okay, so he's going to be a dictator. Yes. Is he going to be an oppressive dictator? Probably not. I mean, we don't see that in future instances where we see him in Kandak, right?
No, and he cares. He really does care about the country.
Yeah. And spoiler, he is a great dictator in this country. We've seen New 52, where he's already the ruler of this country, and it's kind of a golden era there. I mean, everybody's happy, it's prosperous. He seems to be really hands-off as a dictator. The only time he's really brought in is when he needs to be a judge. But for the most part, you get the sense that everybody's just happy that he's there. And his presence alone seems to inspire peace among the people, which is weird. But, you know, with the benefit of seeing into the future a little bit, it works out pretty well, actually.
Just curious, is he, like, officially a dictator? Or did he get, like, voted in by popular choice? Like, is he now their king or something?
He's straight up a dictator.
Okay. So, that's kind of interesting that he, like, wants their freedom and just steps up and is like, I'm in charge. And yeah, he does well, but it is kind of an odd, like, juxtaposition of beliefs there. Like, what's good for the people versus, you know, what's also keeping him in power.
Yeah.
Well, it's like Dr. Doom, right? He rules Latveria, and the people of Latveria seem to generally like living under Dr. Doom, for the most part. But he does rule them, you know, and he has power because he's the most powerful person there. So it's kind of, you know, it's an interesting thing. He definitely, like Dr. Doom, Black Adam does bad things. But, you know, it's hard. It's complicated, right?
So then let's look at the other half of this conflict. What did you guys feel when the JSA went in there?
I don't think that they went about it in a completely wrong way.
Yeah.
They did not inform themselves before entering the conflict.
Also, Hawkman seemed to go into it with, like, the right idea. It's just he didn't tell anybody. Because,
yeah.
Right, he wanted to go in there, retrieve their people, if possible, find out the situation, and then go back. And then, like, that came out much later after there had been casualties and people were injured. It's just, he messed that up. He bungled the situation terribly.
Yeah.
I mean, they came in like, they didn't really come in guns blazing, right? They showed up unannounced.
Yeah.
In Kandex airspace. In their little jet, and they got into a fight. They didn't announce themselves. I think that was Black Adam's grievance, is that they showed up unannounced, right? In force.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they didn't back down, because they were told, like, turn around or else we're gonna attack you. And they were like, no, fuck you. So. Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were saying, we just want to talk, but they made no motion to stop moving whatsoever.
Yeah. Like, they were clearly aggressors in this situation. And the thing about it is, I feel like a lot of them just got dragged along by Hawkman.
Because, definitely.
You know, like, his whole stepping up to be the new chairman, without taking a vote, and then, you know, when Stargirl proposes that, like, okay, it sounds like people support you, let's take a vote to make it official, he says no. And it's like, you know, you could have just taken this little step to make everyone feel better about it, at least, to put it on record. But he just goes in, like, guns blazing from start to finish.
And in the moment, he has a semi-legitimate point. Like, we don't know what's going on over there right now. There could be innocent people dying left and right. We don't know, and we need to go, and we need to find out. And the longer we wait, the worse the situation might be. And, I mean, what you need to do in that situation is get more information in a timely fashion, and probably the best way to do that is just to fucking go there. So it's not that he's wrong, but he's right in a very aggressive way.
Yes.
Which is the problem.
Well, he's right in that he doesn't know what's going on, but his reaction to that is the problem.
Yeah.
That's what creates the conflict.
That's a better way to put it.
They could have shown up on the border and been like, hey, Black Adam, what's going on? And he probably would have been like, oh, hey, guys, come in, check this out. And, you know, they probably wouldn't have been happy that he murdered a bunch of soldiers. But at least innocent, they would could see that innocent people aren't dying.
Yeah, and they could have talked their way to this solution. It could have been a possibility. Yeah.
There's a lot of collateral damage. I mean, like, our man falls through the building, destroying this building where people are living, and, you know, he pisses them off because he destroyed their house.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, Nemesis and Eclipso are killed because the JSA show up and decide to fight them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what happened? Hawkman's impetuousness starts a bad ball rolling.
Yeah.
So
and then it also falls apart with him in the field too, with Hector Hammond and Hector Hall and Dr. Fate and Nabu. That falls apart on them real bad, real fast.
Yeah. Did no one bother to stop and say, like, "Hey, man, why are you talking to your helmet?"
No, it's a thing that they do. Like, when we read the Kent Nelson series, it's just...
Yeah, it's just, like, the way he's like, "No, not now. Go away, Nabu. Go away." It's just, it seems
shouldn't you two
unusual.
Be in sync?
Yeah.
It's probably not a good idea to go fight while you two are arguing, is it?
Yeah, they probably should have got a clue when Nabu wouldn't let them teleport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why they took the plane.
Yeah. At that point, you gotta be like, "Okay, bro, you can sit this one out. You're super powerful and you'd be really, really useful. Yes, but please sit this one out."
Also, it just seems kind of weird that the whole thing with Nabu happened there. Was Nabu being evil? Like, with Lightahall and Kent Nelson trapped in there? Was that actually...
Well, in the ancient times, Nabu and Teth Adam were allies.
Ah.
And so Nabu is like, "No, I'm certain there's a reason for this. You need to actually talk to the guy and figure it out. Don't just go in there fighting." Like, Nabu was the voice of reason. Like, "I don't want you to just run in there and fight. That's not right. And I can tell you right now, if you just run in there and fight, he's going to try to fucking kill you." And so then Black Adam shows up and tries to fucking kill him. And Nabu was like, he's like, "I literally don't know what more I can do here. I told you exactly what was going to happen. It happened, and you're still not fucking listening. So the only thing I can do right now is take the fuck over."
Like, but why was Fury trapped in there?
That one I don't know, but I think he was trying to... Nabu isn't 100% good, per se.
Mm.
I don't think anybody who wants to create the essence of their soul and imbue it into a helmet so they can be immortal is a good person in comics and in much of the literature. Usually the quest for immortality is a sign of evil.
True.
Nabu is one of those characters that kind of sees himself as above good and evil, right?
Yeah, he serves the Lords of Order and he wants to bring order, and that is his job. And if that means having to do something that's a little bit evil to maintain order, then that's what needs to happen. He fights chaos. So he sees this war as being chaotic, and he sees capturing some of these people's souls and essences inside of the helmet to maintain their knowledge and power as being towards the goal of maintaining order.
Well, another thing to remember too is that not only does Nabu have a history with Teth Adam, Teth Adam and Nabu also have a history with Khufu, who is the past incarnation of Hawkman.
Yep.
Right, mm-hmm. and Teth Adam and Nabu teamed up with Khufu for him to take over Egypt.
Yeah. They've done this before, these three.
Except for, in this time, Khufu's on the other side. So he's being a bit hypocritical, but the reason I say he's being a bit hypocritical is because I think it is important for them to keep in mind that it's a different time, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, somebody in the comics calls Hawkman hypocritical, but I think the difference between them is what makes Hawkman a hero. And he has the benefit of being reborn and seeing the world as a young person again multiple times. So he has the optimism of youth much more than Teth Adam or Nabu ever can. But he's seen the light of his mistakes in the past. And he knows that now something like this is, in a way, fundamentally wrong. You might be able to justify it, but something about it feels fundamentally wrong now. And I don't think he articulates things very well without his mace. I think he articulates with his mace, but he's learned from those mistakes. Whereas Nabu and Black Adam clearly haven't. They still think that's the right thing to do. Well, I don't know. Nabu, it's not that he didn't learn. Nabu just wanted people to not fight. Just stop fighting, everybody. And if I have to stop you from fighting by hurting you, then I have to, like, it's that twisted, fucked up thing that people get into.
Yeah.
I need you to stop fighting, so I'm going to punch you both.
This hurts me more than it hurts you.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly what Nabu is. Oh, my God. Yes, David.
Oh, man.
Nail on the head.
That was spot on.
So, but for all of this wonderful gray area stuff, you can tell that this is definitely of its early 2000s era DC. I think that's when this came out? Yeah, early 2000s DC. Because even though you have a perfectly great story, you have to, like, there's always got to be a little bit of extra gore when, like, Hawkman cuts the dude's arm off early on.
Or tears Northwind's wing off.
Yeah, and then later, like, it should grow back. And then later on, like, Black Adam is stomping over the thousand-year-old skulls of his children. Like, come on, guy. You really, like, that's just, it's an unnecessary level. Especially because that's not what made him stop. You know, like, that would have been all right if that turned into a beautiful moment where he stops, sees what he's doing, breaks down into tears, and negotiates. That would have worked, but he didn't. He saw that was happening and got more pissed at them for tricking him into it, which is correct for his character, but then makes it not useful for the story. It's just tacked in there. The extra bit of, oh my God, the horror.
Not to mention the whole, like, Mardi Gras scene at the beginning.
Yeah, that was weird.
Like, as soon as they were in, I realized the JSA was, like, hanging out at Mardi Gras, I was like, all right, we're going to get to a point where somebody asks Power Girl to flash them.
Yeah. You know, the second you show up there. Yeah, St. Roch is like a 24-hour Mardi Gras all year long.
Or, like, the hooker scene.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if that was necessary. It felt awkward in there.
Yeah. Especially because Dr. Midnight was, like, barely in the comic.
Yeah, right. After that point. Like, I think that was his main starring role in this trade.
Well, he did the, like, the brain surgery by radio with the Atom.
Yeah.
And I didn't get the whole part with Mr. Mind being inside Brainwave's head. Like, what, did that have any real bearing on the story at all?
No?
No.
Oh, I think in the end, when they were wrapping things up, it's understood that Mr. Mind was the thing that was corrupting Brainwave and making Brainwave 2 wanting to do evil things.
No, because they actually said Mr. Mind was eating the part that was making him crazier.
Yeah. But
Mr. Mind was making him less crazy.
But no, like, the idea is that, like, basically all they did was kill Mr. Mind, and he was fine. So Mr.
Well, they didn't kill Mr. Mind, right?
I thought they had.
I thought they did.
Remember, I think it's probably a bit of foreshadowing, because he turns out to be the main villain in 52, which comes, like, right after this. Doesn't 52 come out, like, start pretty close behind
this? It happens pretty soon after this.
Yeah, so I think probably it's a little bit of, like, hey, everybody, Mr. Mind is around. Remember that guy?
Yeah.
Especially since Kandak plays heavily into the 52 storyline.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it does.
because what's it called? Osiris gets bitten in half by his alligator buddy.
Yeah, Sobek.
Tawny alligator.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, there were some missteps in this comic like that, but I think the biggest misstep for me consistently was the art in this comic.
Oh, well,
Power Girl's boobs were so crooked.
And did you notice Power Girl had like 6 different faces? I mean, I pay too much attention to Power Girl's face, but she looked different like every single
time
she was drawn.
You're the only person, Andy.
Yeah, I know. she looked different. Her face was different every single time she was drawn, and it bugged me. Like, I also look for it because that was the common complaint levied against comics in the early 2000s was that women just there's no facial recognition for female characters. Male characters have set faces and female characters just don't.
Man, I will say that if these dudes did not have costumes, I would not be able to tell them apart in this comic. Like, there are panels where...
Old dude number one and old dude number two.
Yeah. And Black Adam sometimes looks blonde, depending on the lighting. And I'm like, is that Jay Garrick? What's happening?
Yeah, go look at the first panel when they're in St. Roche, and it's like, oh yeah, it's just a group of old dudes at Mardi Gras.
Four nondescript characters.
You can't tell which is which. You can't. Yeah.
Oh man, they all have like the gray hair on the sides too.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm wondering who decided it was a good idea to bring Stargirl there.
Stargirl did.
Stargirl's like 16.
Remember Billy Batson's like, you didn't have to come, and she's like, I want to be here.
Oh yeah, that's right. Aww.
Is she 16?
She's supposed to be like 16, yeah.
No way.
Yeah,
she's
supposed
like
to be.
30.
Oh, her body type is totally a 30-year-old, but she's supposed to be like a teenager in high school. And also Billy shouldn't be there. Billy's younger.
Well,
Billy,
I mean he
Billy's supposed
turns
to be like in middle school.
He turns into a full grown man when he Shazams, so.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean he should get to walk around, you know, Shazamming the ladies at Mardi Gras.
Wait,
I don't think he's Shazamming anyone.
Was he at Mardi Gras? I gotta
was
look
he there?
Back.
He if but if Stargirl shouldn't be there, he definitely shouldn't be there.
Wait,
I
was
feel
she
like
there?
He was at the party at least because he had his tie on all fucked up. Remember?
Oh yeah, he was at Hawkman's house.
Yeah, and he's like, well, the Wisdom of Solomon didn't include how to tie a bow tie or something stupid.
Okay, yeah.
So yeah, he was totally there. Which is like, who takes a 12-year-old to Mardi Gras?
Well,
you're terrible,
I mean, if you,
Flash, Jay Garrick.
If you live in New Orleans and you invite someone to see you, that's different. Because it's not like he's going bar hopping with everyone.
Yeah, you know what though? I bet you it was Ted Grant being like, "Come on, let's take the kids, put some hair on his chest." That's totally a Ted Grant thing.
Yes, it is.
Sometimes I like Wildcat, and sometimes I really don't like Wildcat.
Yeah.
Oh, do you remember where he's, like, hanging from the post along with Mr. Terrific?
Yeah, and there's something coming out of his arm?
Well, I thought that was his shoulder being dislocated, but I was like, I don't think that's how shoulders dislocate.
Yeah, it came out, there's just, like, a weird thing coming out of his arm.
Yeah.
Maybe it was something getting thrown at him, just placed wrong? I don't know.
While we're nitpicking, I actually have one more thing with, Northwind. That is not how evolution works. Like, that
it's
drove
accelerated
me nuts.
Evolution.
That's still not how accelerated evolution works.
They were
that's
forced.
Like...
It's different.
No, I do not accept this. But I did love his, like, tiny baby wings at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Those were charming, at least.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think he was probably, him and Atom Smasher were probably the two, like, quote-unquote, most good guys of Black Adam's team. Like, if you just look at Nemesis and Eclipso, you're like, oh, yeah, y'all are evil. Brainwave, yeah, you guys, you might think you're being doing something righteous, but let's face it here, you're evil. You're all evil people. Like, Eclipso, congratulations on capturing the spirit of the dark antithesis of Spectre. Good on you. Don't turn it into a slave to harness its power at your will. That's just dumb.
Yeah. And then, like, he just pancakes himself. I don't know, man. That wasn't him. That was Devils. It was just really dark. Also, going back, the thing was not Wildcat's dislocated shoulder. It was a bell pepper.
Oh! it was... But it's like...
It looked meaty, right?
And it looks like off-white or something, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it looks like a piece of bone.
Like, bell peppers weird. Don't come in that color, I don't think.
I hope not.
It was just poor coloring.
Yeah, that happens. Sorry,
but yeah, sorry, I like totally derailed you there.
No, I didn't have anything else.
Can we talk about the beak?
Yes. After you said it last week, at the end of our last recording session, David was like, look at this, and I cannot unsee it now.
There's a shot, I don't remember which issue it's in, but it's like a face on slightly above angle of Hawkman, and the beak is open, and it looks like the beak is his mouth. And you're like, where did the bird mouth come from on him? Is he having accelerated evolution too? No, it's just that Rags Morales likes to have the beak open, and Don Kramer likes to have the beak closed. And
which one did you two prefer?
The closed beak. Closed. Jeez.
It's not appropriate to have a tongue on your nose.
Yeah, he has a little pointy bird tongue sticking out. It's just weird. It's inappropriate.
Man, Hawk Girl's armor.
Oh my god. Totally unnecessary, too. It's just like, hey, let's take Hawk Girl and have her costume be inspired by Madonna. Sound good? My favorite Hawkman though is the one played by Michael Shanks. Did you guys watch that episode of Smallville
with the JSA? No, I've never watched a single episode of Smallville.
I watched it because it had the JSA in it, and because Michael Shanks, the nerdy guy from Stargate. He plays Hawkman.
No way.
And he uses his Batman voice.
Oh, and it's so bad. This right
it is,
now.
It is so bad. I can hear the typing for the Googles.
Yeah, I'm looking it up too. Oh yeah.
Oh, that is strange. I can't approve.
Yep. Another thing you can't unsee.
Ugh, the beard too, man. It's no good.
So what was your guys' favorite scene in this?
That's a good question. My favorite. Well, how about you? What's your favorite scene, Andy?
Fuck, I don't know. That's why I asked you guys.
I think I got one. It's at the end of the second issue where Hawkman walks into his so-called birthday dinner and the waiters start screaming and he's just covered in blood. And I think, I don't know, it's just like, yes, he is full on insane.
That reminds me of a later issue of JSA where he walks into the meeting and they have that like old school big round marble table with the JSA logo engraved into the middle. And they're all kind of just like sitting around before the meeting starts, just chatting. And Hawkman walks in covered in blood and just sits down and says nothing. And somebody else turns to him and is like, dude, you're covered in blood. And Hawkman says, it's not my blood. Conversation over. That is my image of Hawkman. So yeah, that page also fits entirely with my image of Hawkman. Just fuckballs insane.
I have another question while you guys are thinking up your favorite scenes. And why is Hector Hall, like, really old? Isn't Hawkman, like, middle-aged at this point?
Yeah, I don't know. It's... They're weird because magic and curses.
Okay.
I think, basically.
And Hector Hall is Carter's son, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I see. Yeah. It's just confusing.
Reincarnation, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's weird because Shaira Hall died and Carter Hall did not. So there's Kendra Saunders. That's why they have like that weird relationship that you get a moment of at the end of the comic.
Oh, yeah.
That, like, weird, that, like, they have a weird four or five panels about love, and they still, like, I don't love you. I don't love you either, but I love holding your hand, so let's fly together. Like, it was like, it's this weird thing, because they're fated to fall in love, but it didn't happen, and so weird things are carrying over, and the curse is doing weird stuff, and I don't know. It's a continual thing in this, but I don't know if I have a favorite scene in this, but I like a lot of the scenes with Adam Smasher.
Yeah, I was trying to pick an Adam Smasher scene that I liked, and
yeah.
I just liked it. I liked his whole characterization in this comic.
Yeah, I think he's the star of this comic, and he's the star of Geoff Johns' run on this comic. The Traitor 2 that follows after this are phenomenal. I'll give you a spoiler. He comes back to New York and tries to get reaccepted into the team. And, some of it's dramatic and some of it's not, but it's fun to see how different people that you get all of the drama you would expect. Like, I don't know if we should accept him back into the team or not anymore, but his decision to return makes for great storytelling, and that every member of the team gets to have their opinion and gets to be a singular, fully developed characters in their reaction to his decision. So everybody gets their moment in the spotlight for their own development when he makes that decision. And so that makes that trade really, really good, even though it's the tropey, I don't know if we should accept him again. He was obviously trying to be kind of evil. Can we ever trust him? It gets that tropey stuff, but it manages to do something useful with it. He's definitely the star of this run.
Cool.
Yeah. What do you guys think of Our Man?
What is happening? I'm really... I don't know. Like, I guess Our Man's dad is cool.
Yeah.
But what?
So, Rex Tyler has a son named Rick Tyler. And then Rex Tyler dies fighting a villain named Entropy, I think it was?
Extant,
that's what it is. And ever since that fight, there's been nothing but weird time stuff around Our Man. So the original Our Man just had a decorative hourglass hanging from his neck. Rick Tyler has an hourglass full of tachyon particles for fuck, who cares, why not?
For Star Trek reasons.
Yeah, for Star Trek reasons. And like, because they do weird time travel-y stuff, you meet Our Man. I think he's Our Man 6 or something stupid like that. And it's a robot. It's a time-traveling robot named Our Man. He's part of the Our Man family. Our Man,
hey.
the Our Man legacy is super fucking weird. One of the things I really appreciate about the JSA is almost every character gets a legacy in one way or another. Hawkman kind of is his own legacy. And the way DC kind of extends the Hawkman legacy is by passing it through Hector Hall and Dr. Fate for a little while. But it's really cool to see Starman. Star-Spangled Kid, and then Star-Girl. It's really cool to see that 1, 2, 3. You had Diana Lance. You get Our Man. You get like 3 Our Mans. You get Liberty Bell, which then Jesse Quick becomes Liberty Bell and takes over that mantle. It's really cool how a big theme in the JSA is inheriting the mantle. Like Albert Rothstein is the godson of Al Pratt, the original Adam. So he names himself Adam Smasher in honor of his godfather, which is a really cool thing, even though the powers are not alike at all. I always did like that about the JSA, because it makes it so that you can have a familiarity with the team, and you can have a familiarity with the characters and the quote-unquote family, and like the Flash family is a big thing too. But you can still tell new stories with new characters. I think it's one of the things that has kept the JSA relevant for fucking 65 years. Because if you were still writing stories only about, like, those same guys, it would be so old by now.
Yeah, and I think, too, it's just, I don't know, like, it brings in a lot of neat themes. Like, is it okay to let the next generation do what you're doing and, you know, put themselves in danger and... You know, are you okay being shuffled out? Like, Jay Garrick and Alan Scott often are like, oh, we're so old. And they have old ideas that are disagreed with. So, I don't know, like multi-generational teams are actually really neat.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the run after Geoff Johns too. They introduce a new character called Cyclone, which is the daughter of Ma Hunkle. And Ma Hunkle is the JSA version of Jarvis.
Oh, huh.
So imagine Jarvis had a kid who then became an Avenger.
I didn't know that about Cyclone.
Yeah, it's cool. It's pretty cool. I know they're related. I don't know if it's directly daughter. I think it might be niece or something like that, but they are related, and it's pretty cool. The other reason I like the run that follows after this is Power Girl's like, fuck it, I'm chairman. I've been here long enough, so I've got more cred than the kids, but I haven't been here as long as the old people, so I ain't dumb anymore. I'm gonna do this. And she does a terrible job, by the way. She's a horrible, horrible chairperson. Yeah. Well, you guys ready to rate this?
Sure.
Yeah.
All right, David, since you sounded so enthusiastic, I'm going to make you go first.
All right, I'm going to give this a 3.5. I liked it. I did enjoy reading it. I liked it about the same as I liked the one we read last week. The
James Robinson Golden Age.
Yeah, but for different reasons. I just thought this was kind of a tighter story. You know, it kind of banged off really quick. There wasn't a slow build up, and you know, not every character was great in it, but the characters that were central to the story, like Black Adam, Hawkman, and Atom Smasher, they were all really well done. And so, you know, even though it's not a perfect comic, I think it was definitely above average. And of, you know, of the three JSA stories that we read for this little arc, this was definitely the best one. So, yeah, 3.5.
All right. Jen?
I'm going to give this a 3. I liked how they explored, you know, who the good guys are. And I really do like Black Adam. I think he's an interesting character. And I like any time he appears in a run. He's never let me down. But the art, I wasn't a huge fan of. And I don't know. Like, I'm always uncomfortable critiquing artists because I cannot draw, and I do respect them. But, you know, there were things like Power Girl's boobs and her faces, Hawkman's mask. It was a bit distracting. I just feel like some of the characters could have gotten more screen time, so to say. Just because, like, you know, we mentioned Dr. Midnight was barely in it. It was really about, like, Hawkman versus Black Adam. And while that's not bad, it just seemed kind of strange to have this, like, huge ensemble cast and then ignore half of them for half the time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, overall, it was an interesting trade, and I did enjoy reading it, so 3.
All right, I'm going to give this... it's tough. I'm going to give this a 3.5. I'm going to go ahead and vote it up. I have the same gripes that Jen did. Plus, I mean, I don't like unnecessary... gore's not the right word, but brutality just the unnecessary gestures of shittiness. Like... Black Adam stepping on the skulls of his family in the tomb, and I read on that a bit, and it doesn't sit right with me. And yeah, I mean, it's I don't know, how do you draw Power Girl's boobs wrong? Just draw the two biggest circles you can, done, because you know that's what boobs look like, big circles. So yeah, I'm gonna do a 3.5, because all that said, I think that this did a really, really good job of showing the interaction of new ideas and young ideas that really make the JSA what it is, and also did a really good idea of putting in a gray area and making it effective. It's really, really, a lot of comics talk about putting in a gray area, or like maybe the bad guy has legitimate motives, but no, he's still like doing something terrible. And I mean, Black Adam's doing something terrible, but every indication that this comic gives you is that it's not a bad call. It's not a good call, but it's not a bad call. And I appreciate that. It's a legitimate gray area that he's wandering into, which I feel like doesn't happen that often in comics. So, yeah, 3.5. All right. Next week, I honestly don't know what the fuck is going to happen, everyone. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to give you a spoiler. We recorded all of these JSA things, like, up front at once. So next week, we're supposed to be reading Super, which is a comic you could get from the internet. I may or may not be here. We will try to have guest host Nick. If we can, I don't know. The schedule might change. We might do Southern Bastards, because Southern Bastards is supposed to be Amazeball. And Nick, one of our best favorite listeners, suggested it to us. So we're like, fuck it. Yeah, let's do Southern Bastards. But like I said, this is 3 weeks out. We're not going to know for sure. If you definitely want to know what we're doing next week, go to the website. Go to welcometocomics.com. On the left, click on the button that says Future Shows. And by the time this episode goes up, the schedule for next week will be completely set. And it will say what we are reading next week. It'll have a little link that says Amazon. You can click on that. It will take you to the trade that we are reading for that week that you can order yourself. So, yeah. If nothing else, go to the website. Go to welcometocomics.com. Click on Future Shows. Also, while you're there, click on the button that says Become a Patron. And go to patreon.com/welcometocomics through that link and become a patron today. Support the show. Thanks to your awesome, awesome support, we are able to pay for the renewal of our web host and our URL, our domain. Completely thanks to you guys, and I appreciate it greatly. So if any of you are listening and haven't signed up yet, seriously, go sign up for a penny. It may not feel like you're doing anything money-wise, but just to feel that support and love helps us so much. So go and just give a penny. That'd be awesome. Okay, that's it for me. You guys got anything?
Nope, that's it.
No.
Thanks. All right. Then until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.